Good morning. My name is Greg Franzen, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm sober today by the grace of God and the fellowship of this program. I made a few notes here. I'll have to say, Steve had asked me to if I'd like to speak at the round of last August, and it's the first time I recall questioning Steve's judgment. I'm serious. I was really caught by surprise. I haven't done anything like this for a while. I live in rural Colorado. Our meeting, our entire group is here. Okay? It is. And we all rode in the same vehicle. Now, to give you an idea, I'm not going to mention any numbers or anything, you know, but we had enough room in Bruce's van to actually lie down and sleep on the way. So this is something I just haven't done for a while. And then I also questioned his motives. I thought maybe, why is Steve mad at me? I mean, we have speakers like Ted S. From Aberdeen. And of course, this gentleman, Phil, from town here was an excellent speaker. The intimidation was getting worse and worse and worse, right? And of course, Donna Al-Anon was fantastic. Pat was a funny speaker and did a great job. And of course, Don, I mean, come on. And then me. I'm thinking, what have I done to deserve this? And then, of course, you know, when you think about it for a while, if you have that good of a lineup of speakers, I guess even if I, you know, blow it, I mean, who's going to know? I mean, really. And then, of course, Don's analogy on don't be afraid of failing last night pulled me through the night, I think. I'm quite certain no one's going to remember me. Okay. I know you don't. At your meeting next week, you'd be saying, "Ma, geez, that was a great roundup. All feeling real good about yourself." Yeah, there was Ted, Don, Phil, Donna, Pat. Who was that guy on Sunday? Nobody will remember. So there we go. So really, that has taken a lot of pressure off me. And also, I haven't done this, like I said, for a while, and I wasn't sure what I was going to say. And I ran into Ted this morning. He said, "Hey," I think, "geez, how much time am I going to talk?" And everybody, and I found out Ted's in a big hurry today. He said, "Well, Greg, just tell us what you know." Okay, your coffee won't get cold. I'll say that right now. I'm not going to say how long I'm talking, but it's going to stay hot. Checkout's at noon. You'll be out early. Okay. Anyway. I'm having a good time. I think the best part is got to travel 700 and some miles with a couple guys in AA. Done that a lot of times. And I started doing that in Moorhead, Minnesota. That's what we did there. When you sobered up, you went to roundups. And you were active. And that's another reason why I'm even capable and able to come here today, is because of that meeting and the people there. I do have a few notes that I have to mention. Of course, for starters, I do want to thank the committee and the roundup people. You've been really nice. It has been a great roundup. And of course, the speakers have been fantastic. I've enjoyed myself until now. And just a brief warning. I know when I do talk and I'm so overwhelmed with the way my life is today, I get a little choked up sometimes. And it's going to happen. It's already happening. Heck, I'm not even started yet. There's nothing in the coffee that I know of. I have a wonderful family. And I guess hopefully I'll get to that part if I don't pass out. And it's always great. I haven't been out to as many roundups as usual. I've had some, you know, I'm a typical alcoholic. When I do things, I go full bore. I have all my rockets on, you know. And I've just really had some big stuff going on in the last couple of years. So I haven't been to as many roundups as I'd like to. I made it to the roundup, of course, in Moorhead last summer, and I'm looking forward to that one again this year. But and I think Bruce and Pat will be interested in going again as long as I'm not speaking. Okay? So here we go. I know we share in a general way what, or I share in a general way what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And that's the topic I heard at the first meeting I ever went to. That's a projection of the basic symptoms of alcoholism. And the remarkable thing was, at that meeting I heard people talking about themselves, and they were alcoholic. I could relate, and I wasn't even alcoholic. You know, it's just amazing how that worked out. But before I got there, I grew up in an alcoholic home in a rather rural town in South Dakota. It seemed like the only normal way to live. We always lived from feast to famine. We weren't actually poor. I thought we were dirt poor. My dad was, when he was sober, he was a go-getter, and we did really well. And when he was drinking, forget it. We just never knew. So there was a definite inconsistency there, and a lot of fear, a lot of insecurity. I didn't know what all those things were. I thought that's just the way it was. Also, I was brought up with the idea that everyone else had a golden spoon in their mouth, and we didn't. Everyone else inherited large fortunes of money, and, well, we had to work for it. And it wasn't, I found out later, it wasn't quite like that. There was drinking in my family background, a lot of it. We had some of my mother's brothers stay with us, because they were basically homeless and ruled incompetent. One of my uncles was on a military pension. He was in World War II, and that's why he drank. And there wasn't anything wrong with this guy, but he was getting, back in the early 70s, he was getting $1,000 a month, you know, from the government. He couldn't make it a day on $1,000. They had to, you know, he was so bad, they had to just, they ruled him as incompetent, and they would only give him a couple bucks, you know. And according to my mother and her sisters, this guy was an alcoholic. He was not. He had problems because of the war, and died from cirrhosis of the liver, and he still was not an alcoholic. So I don't know. I guess that's denial. My other uncle died of alcoholism as well, and he wasn't an alcoholic either. You know, anything but an alcoholic. Kind of like Ted was saying, they weren't that bad. You know, they died from it, but they weren't that bad. And I saw all this going on. Of course, I had firsthand experience with my father. In my family, if you were old enough to walk, you were old enough to work. And man, I hated that. My dad was a plastering contractor, and God, that was hard work, and I was lazy, you know. But the money was okay, and I was forced to do it long enough to where I got paid, and I just did it anyway. And ran into some interesting experiences with my father and his drinking. And the main reason I was there, too, I didn't know it for a while, but my mother sent me with him to keep an eye on him, and I had to report back to her. That's not normal. You know, I had no idea that wasn't normal until I got to AA. But anyway, I was around it a lot, and I drank early. I mean, I recall we did a lot of work in Watertown, South Dakota, and there was this bar, Roski's. I don't know if it's still there, but they had 25-cent tap beers. I know I wasn't any older than 10 years old, and I was in there drinking taps right with the rest of them, you know. And after about four, you know, six, eight taps, I was ready to deck the old man and drive home. You know, that just started right away, you know. And I had drank before that, too. I was around it all the time. I was always available. And I recall one of the first times I really got drunk, because I always drank. It's not like I remember my first drink. But I remember the first time I really got good and drunk. we got snowed out in school, so I went over to a friend's house, and they were twins, Tom and Tim Waugh, and their mother, it was a single mother, and the father had been killed in a drunk driving accident, I believe, but they had a full set up in a bar, and we knew where the key was, so I thought, hey, you know, maybe we ought to have a couple. We unlocked the bar and all this, and poured up some glasses, and it was so similar to what Don was saying. These guys took a little sip and cringed, you know, and I thought, man, I remember seeing John Wayne walk into a bar, the Duke, he was, they just threw that whiskey back. You know, there's nothing to it. That's what a man would do, don't you think? I think, yeah, get out of the way, you know, give me that. I threw it back, and it was terrible. It was Lord Kelbert. Oh, that stuff was terrible, but I just sucked it up, you know. And I said, don't we have a bottle around here? What the heck's with these little glasses? And I threw back a bottle and tried to take three or four chugs, and I didn't spit it out, and I didn't puke or anything. But, man, I was drunk. I mean, a few minutes later, I was falling down and really having a difficult time walking. And I recall we played some music, and there were just three of us kids there. We were dancing. I mean, that was a great party. How much is that doggy in the window? I'll never forget that song. You ever hear that? I could sing it. I could sing it for you right now. I mean, that song is branded in my memory the first time I really got good and drunk. And of course, you know what you do after you get a few jags on you. Well, I had to go find my girlfriend. I was third grade. And I knew I should have known there was trouble at this time, because her father was a police officer in this town. He would not allow her to even talk to me, but I went after her anyway. And it all started, I was, you know, from there I was going to run away from home, and hitchhikers wouldn't even pick me up. I was stunk so bad for booze and had a hangover, and I probably said, I'll never do that again. I said that a lot of times, never do that again. And of course, when you're in third grade, you don't go out to the bars every night or anything like that, and you don't get into a lot of domestic violence, or at least start it. But obviously, I must have drank somewhere along the line, because I'm here. As I got older, it was just, well, when you're in a small town, I mean, that's what you do. That's where the action is. You drink and occasionally get in a fight, and that's where the excitement is. And the reason, I guess the biggest reason that I drank is it just made everything better. My entire family life was okay. The way I felt about myself was enhanced greatly. I mean, I always felt inadequate, insecure, not a part of. And this stuff was like magic, and you know what I mean. I mean, I just couldn't understand why everybody didn't drink after a while. I mean, that was my life, and my life centered around that. And I got into the recreational drugs, everything you could imagine. If it was available, I did it, and I did as much as I could. Ended up, I used to spend a lot of time with the drug dealers and stuff like that too, and it was it got pretty crazy there for a while. Alcohol worked for a long time, and it got to the point where, man, I was in tough shape. The time I was 19 years old, 20 years old, whew, I mean, I was seeing strange things and stuff, you know. I recall, I still to this day have a fear of rats. I was passed out in my vehicle, my pickup, in front of this bar. It was right by a veterinarian's clinic, and I remember waking up and seeing this 3 foot tall, about 85 pound rat right in front of my truck. And that's what really hit me hard too, because I was terrified of rats, and this thing was there licking his paws, and I know he was coming for me, you know. And I had a gun. I never went anywhere without a gun. I always had guns with me. I still do, but I'm not for the same reason. I'm really not afraid. I just, I shoot predators around my house. They don't eat my children and stuff. But, man, I'll tell you, I was so scared. I would peek over the dash, and it was still there, you know, and I was about to cry, and it was really a terrifying experience, and I didn't know what was going on at the time, but that rat was not there, okay? And I was really disappointed with the city sewer and water department, and I went directly to the head, and I said, man, we've got to do something about this rat problem in town here. I said I was out by the tiger's den. Of course, I was drinking a little bit, but, man, I saw a 3-foot-tall rat. It went 85 pounds. It was Boone and Crockett, baby. I mean, this thing, it was a record book rat. These guys laughed at me and laughed, and I was serious, man. I left town after that. I still have a sister that lives there, and I don't know, I think they still bring up that rat thing every once in a while, and that was a long time ago. Fortunately, the guy I talked to was the head of the water department in the city. He was a friend of mine and sober. I think he was sober at that time, too, but he knew I was losing my mind, and it showed some concern. But what happened, I carried on like that and ended up running into a gal and getting married. She got pregnant and we got married, and I didn't know any other way to do that. I mean, I was so inappropriate. But I really, after that happened, you know, and I knew there were some people relying on me, I thought, well, now this is probably good. Now I need to settle down, suck it up like a man, and do the right thing, whatever that was. I never knew what that was. I had a conscience and everything. I knew what I was doing wrong, but as far as an order and of living a good, clean life or being a responsible adult, I had no idea. It's not even that I didn't know the answer. I didn't even know the questions. I had no idea. I really didn't, and I was so scared. And I had to, at that time, I knew I couldn't drink and maintain. There's no way. And I had to give up the drugs. I just had to, because I didn't trust myself at all. I mean, I knew anytime I touched anything, I was off and running. So I was 20 years old, ended up moving to beautiful Fargo, North Dakota. I'd never been there before. And I moved there and got married. Oh, man. I'll tell you, I was just a scared little boy whistling in the dark. I had no idea what was going on. And I couldn't get a job. I was drawing unemployment, staying home, drinking. Of course, I wasn't going to drink, but I was drinking vodka, and I would blend up vodka and strawberries because it was kind of like a recreational drink or something. You know, it wasn't like really drinking. I'd have that for breakfast. It was kind of like a health food breakfast. That's true. And I did not think that was drinking. I mean, drinking's when you go out to the bars with the guys and you have beer, and I was above that. I drank in the mornings at home and watched Oprah or something. And I tried to sober up by the time my wife got home from work. She had a great job. She was a registered nurse and very intelligent and stuff. And I could for a while. I wasn't really sober, but at least I could maintain it, and then I couldn't even do that. So I gave it another shot at quitting after my son was born, and I tapered off. I wouldn't drink like maybe what seemed to be every 2 weeks, and then I started a little business. I had to grow a mustache so I looked older, because people wouldn't hire me. It was in plastering and drywall and stuff like that, and they didn't think I knew what I was doing, and I had no confidence, so I grew a mustache. I went door to door. I mean, I went door to door and got a little business going, and worked really hard, and the drinking always came back to haunt me, though. And I really wanted to quit from the time I was 21. And what happened there is I just couldn't do it. It took me years. You know, I really started quitting 3 years before I ever made it to AA. I just found that, I could make it a week or two. It seemed like a month or a year. And I'd get so frustrated and so irritable, restless, and discontented. I just couldn't bear it any longer. I'd be like homicidal. And I didn't want to be that way. But yet, and I didn't want to drink either. I didn't know what to do. What happened is I ended up, I'd always end up drinking. And I got involved right with this bowling team in North Fargo. That was going to fix things. Some guys asked me, yeah, you got to get into this bowling. And I thought maybe, you know, I'd get out there and get to know some people and all that. And I'll make this short and sweet. I mean, every Thursday night, I'd go to bowling, and I'd leave about 7. I'd say, oh, don't worry, I'll be home at 10. My wife would laugh at me every time, laugh at me. And I've got this drunk, I had drunk logic, too, because I wouldn't even get 2 blocks away. I'd think, the nerve of her. I said I would be home at 10. My God, what's the matter with her? Can't she understand English, crying in the rain? Well, what I failed to realize is I never made it home at 10. This had gone on for months. Not once had I ever made it home at 10. I even had started home, and the clock struck 10. I thought, huh, I'm not going to make it by 10 anyway. I'd go back to the bar. What the hell? She's going to, you know, she's going to chew me out anyway. I got home once at 10:01, and, you know, hell with her, and it took me about 3 blocks. It was her fault. It was. I still believe it was her fault sometimes. You know, God. So I'd come home 2 days later, and then she'd really be mad. I'd think, well, I ought to show her, you know. And that I believe to be insanity, because I did the same things over and over and over again. And I swear, every single time I expected different results. Every time. It's just textbook stuff. I mean, man. And I couldn't help it either. I couldn't understand why I did what I did, when I did it. And it was just so baffling to me. I just didn't have any answer at all for it. And I didn't know where to get the answer. I certainly couldn't ask anybody. My God, they might think something's wrong, you know. And I wanted to look good above all. I wanted to look good, you know. I was always dying on the inside, trying to look good on the outside. And you know what really ended up happening? I just got so tired of all that. I really had to throw the towel in. I really did. I mean, I just couldn't take it another minute. Not another second even. And that's when I think the miracle started to happen for me. I was really hurting. I was hard up. I didn't have any work to do. And I called this one contractor. I don't remember the exact details, but they needed a little bit of help. I was in a plaster. So I ended up going to work for this company on the old Fairmont Creamery, doing some stuccoing and stuff. And I no longer, I barely got on the job. I was probably late, and I was certainly hungover. I was hurting. I was, I remember shaking a little bit and stuff, and sweating, and I could smell myself. I hated that. You know, when you just couldn't stop that smell. I could have showered 15 times that morning. I would have smelled. Whatever was coming out of my pores was bad. And I ended up, you know, I've always been fairly observant, you know, when I was sober. But I kind of listened around the job, kind of, you know, picked my spot. And I heard some guys talking about this old, what's his name, old Ron was on the water wagon again. Yeah, they're shaking their head about this guy. They're saying, oh, yeah, he's on the water wagon again. And I thought, really, water wagon? I know what the heck that is. I've heard of that one before. My dad was on that all the time. Fell off a lot, too. But water wagon, that's a 30s phrase, I think, or something. But I knew what it was. Anyway, I ended up working right beside this Ron guy. And boy, I'll tell you something right now. He was a drunk. You could tell by looking. The minute you saw this guy, you'd say, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, this guy. He should be on the water wagon. And I took one look at his vehicle. It was this red and white Ford truck that there wasn't a fender or a door on this vehicle or it wasn't dented. It looked like he had been backed into, and he had backed into everything in Moorhead, Minnesota. I'm not kidding you. it ran. I was really surprised. I thought maybe they'd have to push it to get it started. Now, this was a drunk's vehicle. And I recall briefly thinking, man, if I was in tough shape of this guy, I'd probably quit too, you know. There's got to be some place for a guy like that. Anyway, I ended up working with him, and I was kind of curious about this water wagon thing, and I had heard about AA before. My dad had been around it, in and out of it, and stuff like that. So I don't know why or how I ever did it, but I just asked him. I said, you know, I had heard that he quit drinking, and I said, do you go to AA? And he said, yeah. He perked up quite a bit when I asked him that. He said, yeah, I've been there before, but this time, he said, I think it's different. He says, I'm getting a sponsor, and I'm going to regular meetings, and he's going to really give it a shot this time. And he was very convincing. What I didn't know is he was only going for about 6 months to quiet this Judge Jarrity dump. He thought, I'll just, you know, he was convincing to me. I said, oh, really? And sometime in that conversation, I said, you know, and this is the way I remember it, and I find that my memory isn't that good sometimes, but every once in a while, I drink just a little bit too much. Oh, wow, he said, and we went on working, and he really perked up. And that's what I really believe, too. Every once in a while, I drank just a little bit too much. I'll tell you right now, I used to drink a half gallon of Calvert a day when I was 19 years old, and Jack Daniels. That's just a little bit too much. I would eat LSD, snort cocaine, throw back a handful of pharmaceutical speed, drive across the state, drink a half gallon of booze and 2 6-packs of malt liquor, and then start partying. Now that's just a little bit too much. I don't know why I didn't die, you know? I can't believe my body could take that much booze and drugs. And it's just insane. So that's about how honest I was at that point. But what happened then, somehow, at some time in that day, or I don't know when it was, I do recall this guy saying, you know, and I kind of thought maybe I could help out my dad a little bit too, you know, by maybe checking into this AA. He said, you know, there's an open meeting at North Junior High School every Sunday morning at 11 o'clock. And I said, now an open meeting is where you don't have to be alcoholic to go. I said, you could come as my guest anytime you'd like to go. I thought, well, okay, I'll think about it. And I really, really thought about it. I kind of wanted to go. So I couldn't wait. I got home and I told my wife at that time, plaintiff number one, and she wasn't that bad. It wasn't her fault. But I said, you know, she's a public health nurse, registered nurse. She was very well aware of what alcoholics were. I mean, she took care of them every day, you know, and I said, you know, I met this guy, and I think I just can't seem to quit drinking when I start. I'm okay for weeks at a time, but I think I might have a problem. I might be an alcoholic. You'd think the roof had caved in on the house. I mean, she says, listen, I deal with alcoholics every day. I'm not going to have some idiot walking around here saying, hi, I'm Greg, I'm an alcoholic. I said, okay, don't worry about that. I won't go. About 6 months later, it all kept happening. You know, the same thing over and over again and over and over again. And finally, man, I'll tell you, I was dying. Boy, I was dying, and I was thinking about taking my own life. And I wasn't really serious. I'm too big of a coward. But I was as serious as I'd ever been. I even got out the old 16-gauge and oiled it up a little bit. I wanted to make sure it looked good for the occasion. And I thought, well, you know, I did talk to that wrong guy 6 months ago. I think I know his name, and I could probably get in touch with him. And I wonder if I should kill myself or go to AA. And I really had to think about it. Good thing I'm a coward. You know, good thing, because I would have much rather killed myself. I just didn't have the guts. But I called him up, and he said, yeah, it was same meeting, same place, same time. I mean, and that really makes the point of a regular meeting, a regular time. That was 6 months ago, and I couldn't remember my name from day to day, but I remembered where that meeting was, what time it was, and when it was, what day it was, you know. And it's at a different location right now, but I bet it's still at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning. And it's a more at Thursday night group. But I ended up going into that meeting, and it's amazing how things work in AA, too, because I walked in that door. It took me a while, and I didn't want to park too closely either because it was kind of close to my in-law's house, and I didn't want anybody to know I was going over there, you know. And I was such a well-known guy in the community. I was quite certain there'd be a write-up in the Fargo form that, oh, yeah, Mr. that thing. But the remarkable thing is I walked into that meeting, and the first guy I saw when I walked in was a guy I went to high school with, Steve. And, man, that proved, I'll never forget that as long as I live. I will never forget the look, what I saw that morning, because I knew him when he was in his worst. And you saw him then, too. That guy was in bad shape. I mean, whew. And I never really liked Steve. I always kind of liked his sisters. He was, you know, we just didn't really get along, I don't think. We weren't really have much in common. I didn't like him at all. And I still get along with his sisters. They're nice girls. And I like Steve, too, now, of course. But my point is, I walked in, and, man, this guy was not the same guy I knew. That was not the same person I knew. It reminded me of when my father had came back from a pretty nice treatment center. He came back, and he was like, where's Dad, you know? I had never seen that remarkable of a change in that big of a change in a person before. And his eyes were open. He always was like this. I'll tell you a quick story about him. His eyes were open. He always was like this. I'll tell you a quick story about him too, to give you an idea. These guys would drive around and smoke drugs and drink and all that, and they were driving around one night 15 miles an hour all over the back roads in South Dakota, and they just couldn't get out of this fog. It was so foggy outside. Finally, someone had to go to the use of bathroom. They stopped, got out of the car. The stars were out. It was crystal clear. There was so much smoke in the car. They thought they were driving in a fog storm. You know? That'll give you an idea where this guy was coming from. That's still a well-known story in northeastern South Dakota, I'll tell you. That's how aware he was. Now, this guy was Mr. Potential, too. I mean, he was a very intelligent guy. He did really well in school, if he went. You know, and he could have, you know, the opportunities were unlimited for him. I was always a little envious because he was so smart, and he didn't take advantage of it. There he was. Something was going on with this guy. Something was going on. I'll never forget that. That was so impressive to me. This is a program of attraction rather than promotion. I had been promoted for years. 9 years, people were telling me, listen, buddy, every girl I ever dated said, you have a problem with alcohol and drugs, and you should do something about it. Well, I'd get rid of them. It's a lot easier to get a different girlfriend than to listen to that garbage, you know. Say, see ya. I don't need that stuff. And all my family members, my sister by this time, had disowned me. My brother didn't bring his kids around. They weren't allowed. I was a drug dealer, smoker, everything, you know. So I really had no family life to speak of. To get back to this guy and the attraction of AA, I was so blown away. And I went into that meeting, people were sharing in a general way what they were like, what happened, and what they were like today, and I could relate. I remember the speakers at that meeting. I remember the chairman was Denny. And I remember Russ got up and talked and talked and talked and talked and talked. And that reminds me, every time I talk too long, I think of Russ. I got to lift your watch up. I didn't expect to even talk this long. But anyway, that's what happened. I ended up going into what I believe to be the best group in AA, some of the finest people in the program. I didn't know it at the time, obviously. But, there are people in that meeting, and it's moved around some now, are they the people I respect the most in my life? I mean, they're people that I look up to. I don't always ask. I've never always been a good, asking for advice. I've always been a good observer. I've learned a lot, and I've tried to tailor my life today after the people I met at that very first meeting. That's a life-changing event for me, and that's why I'm here today too. I'm asked, Steve asked me to do this. I don't really like speaking, and at the risk of sounding negative, I'd much rather crawl on broken glass for 15 miles than get up here and speak. I'm not kidding you. But I do remember another pearl I got from a guy in AA, Scott S., told me back in February of 1983. He said, "Listen, Greg," I don't know why I remembered this either, but he said, "Don't ever say no to an AA request unless AA quits working. Don't ever. You just say yes. If you don't like doing it, do it anyway." And I said, "Okay." I was afraid I was going to drink, and I didn't know I could say no for a long time. And that's why I'm here. I'm not here because I like speaking. I'm not here for any other reason other than I want to do AA justice. AA's given me everything I have today. All the good things in my life have come from AA and the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I may be leaving myself open for abuse, but I'll do anything I'm asked to do in AA, and I might not do a very good job of it, but I'll do the best job I can do because I owe that to AA. I know that. So that's that. I ended up, I kept going to that meeting. People were very nice to me. That wasn't happening, not even at home at that time. And I was invited to meetings. I was picked up, taken to meetings. I was acted as, people acted as though I was something special. And until some other new guy came along and screwed it all up, Who was that anyway? I was going to kill him. I was just going to kill him off one by one, I think it was Dave Buehling or something, Came in and screwed it all up. Then I had to start doing something, Man, that was a luck. I thought I'd be the last of the quality newcomers, and I'd just be showered with gifts and praise. But no, some other goof came along and screwed it all up. That still makes me mad. Anyway, what it's like today, obviously, I fell in love with AA and the people in it, and my goal and my dreams at that time were, and after seeing Steve and stuff like that, Steve D at that meeting, I thought, I know I'll never be as happy as these people. They're laughing all the time. I think they're doing drugs or something, And things are going, their outside appearance looks so good, it'll never be that good for me. But if I could just get just a little bit of that, I'm a sicking around. Just a little bit of that was 10 times better than what I had ever had in my life. And I've gotten more than just a little bit of that. Man, I haven't left enough time to tell you how great my life is today. But I kept going, and I was told a long time ago that I was just scratching the surface. Things get better every day, every month, every year, if I want them to. And that's still true today. I can't wait. Ted says it, Don says it, Steve, Kevin. Life just keeps getting better and better. And I've went through a lot of changes in my life in the last few years, from moving around the country and trying different areas to work. And I ended up, like I said, everything in my life today that's good is a result of Alcoholics Anonymous. Around 10 years ago, Don and I went out and visited Steve. He was in Quantico, Virginia. And we were out shopping. That was the last time I bought a suit, by the way. And the thing shrunk. I'm not kidding you. I should take that back. I'm famous for taking stuff back and getting my money back. The remarkable thing, too, is my shoes are still fine, but my suit shrunk. I don't get it. I We were, of course, our objective was to visit Steve, and we did and had a great time. But I met a young gal there and kept in touch with her. And shoot, about 7 years later, I ended up getting married to her. That's my second marriage. The other one didn't pan out. I've got a good life now. I'm married and I want to be. You know, what a concept. Hey, I'm serious. You know what I'm talking about. That kind of stuff really amazes me. That I used to think, after when I was married the first time, and certainly nothing against her. She was a great gal, and she still is. Very successful woman. Has done a fine job of raising my son. And I didn't want to be married, and I didn't know you could want to be married and like it and be comfortable with it. And hey, I'm just amazed. It's a great deal. And something I have to mention too is one of the major motivators for me too when I came to AA was that I had a son. I was a father, and I was just a little boy. But I wanted to be just a little bit happy, but above all, I wanted to be a good father to this boy. I wanted him to have a shot. And he is a good kid. He still is. He's 18 years old today. Or not this day, but he was 18 in March. He's going to graduate from high school this year, and he's has very good GPA. He's 6'7", about 220 pounds. Excellent basketball player. He could have done really well if you'd have stuck with that. It really amazes me how intelligent my kids are. He didn't get it from me. You know, I know that, and I'm not putting myself down. It's just that I guess I married smart women or something. I don't know, but they're all really quite a bit smarter than me. Even my two-year-old daughter is smarter than I am. But he's doing very well. I did get a call not too long ago, though, that he's been to a lot of AA meetings. He used to go to open meetings every Sunday morning, and he'd come. Before the meetings, he'd walk up to the microphone. He'd say, "Hi, I'm Joey Franz, and I'm not an alcoholic." And he'd start speaking, and then he'd do it after the meeting. He just couldn't wait to get in front of the mic. I thought, we'd better save a chair for this guy. You know, who? He wants to talk? He didn't get that from me either. but he ended up in the emergency room, ODing on alcohol. He thought he'd tried out drinking, and he hadn't drank until just the last 6 or 7 months. And seemed to like it. What do you know? But it's pretty serious stuff. It's nothing genetic about alcoholism, is there? Geez. Anyway, he called me up, and he seemed to think I'd be extremely angry about him going to the emergency room. And I said, he wasn't concerned that he nearly died. He was concerned that I would be angry. And I said, I'm really not angry. Or how you feeling? You know. And he said, what do you think I should do? And I said, I think maybe you ought to call AA. I mean, I can't go over and start sponsoring you or anything, but you've been to AA before. I said, it's a little different. It's the same thing with me. I went to a meeting or two with my dad, but it didn't apply to me at that time, I'll tell you. But I said, if you just give him a call, he'll come and get you. So he did go to a meeting. And it's kind of funny. He didn't care much for the meeting because there was a bunch of old people there in their 30s and 40s. I said, yeah, I know. There are a bunch of old guys like Kevin there. And then he was, the last I heard, young people's meeting. And I even told him, I said, there's probably some nice young ladies there too. I don't know if he went. I haven't heard from him. He's related to me. He probably found a nice young lady and moved to Tahoe or something. Who knows? But he's at that age where I don't hear from him as much as I'd like to. I know he's in good hands. He's been raised really well. I've done my best. I have no regrets. It's another thing with all my family members. I am current. I'm up to date. Joey's going to do what he's going to do. It's not in my hands. It really isn't. I can't control the situation. His mother will try. But and he's a religious guy. I mean, he's been I don't know. That can be good or bad, but he has a lot of things going for him in that way. He's just going to have to wait and see. I mean, if it causes problems, I think he knows where to go. I think he does. It's worked for me, and he knows that. I've always spoke highly of AA. He knows a number of people in AA that are incredible examples in life and living, you know. So we'll just have to see what happens in the future. Anyway, I'm in Colorado. I'm married. I have a new wife. There are a number of AA people at my wedding. It was in Las Vegas. Kind of cool. When I was thinking, let's get married in Vegas because it was a good location for all family members, and who doesn't want to go to Vegas? I mean, if you want to overbook a wedding, go to Vegas. You know, everybody wants to come to Vegas, and that was great. It was a lot of fun. But it wasn't like the drive-through Elvis wedding, like I kind of thought it was going to be, and I was disappointed. I like Elvis, you know. He's alive and well. I know he is. Probably going to meet him somewhere. But the king. But it was a darn nice wedding, you know, in the Treasure Island. Great deal of fun. It's, and like I said, I like being married, and we're going to have our third anniversary in May. And remark, you know, it's astounding to me is my daughter's going to be 2 next week. So, you know, well, it was a planned pregnancy. What do you know? I've never done that before. Crazy. But my daughter is really, I'll tell you, this little girl, I wasn't prepared for a little girl, I'll tell you. She's got me. I'm telling you. She's really intelligent, too. Way above average. Yeah, she's, and I'm going to brag about her, too. I'll brag about my son. I'll brag about her. She's going to be 2 next week. She's known her alphabets for about 3 months. Okay? That's not right. I mean, I don't think that's common. I'm kind of ignorant about kids and their development, but she started singing the alphabet a long time ago. And she can sing 5 songs. She knows just 5 songs from start to finish. Some of them have 2 verses, you know. This is kind of strange. You have a little 30-pound adult around. I don't know what. Her doctor just can't believe it. He's never seen anything like it before. She speaks quite fluently. You know, she talks, converses like an adult. I mean, I talked to her on the phone. She says, how are you doing, Daddy? How's the weather? You know, and well, it's a little cloudy. He says, it snowed yesterday. I'm thinking, man, what's going on with this kid, you know? So she got her mother's brains, thank God, and I still have mine. She's really a lot of fun. She likes hunting, fishing. She rides on the four-wheelers with me. She won't ride on my motorcycle yet, but it's just give her time. We go do stuff together, and she likes the outdoors. She was with me. I had some problems with predators. There's bobcats trying to eat my chickens and cats and stuff, so I know she's going to be a hunter because I was on the four-wheeler, and this bobcat ran across the driveway, so I had this gun. I pulled up, and I had to cover her ears and shot, and I quickly put her on the ground. She's about a year old, and I put her on the ground. I said, just wait right there. I have to go chase. So I ran over here, and she's running down the road looking and trying to find the bobcat. She's already had the gun. I think she's going to be a hunter, too. But her mother will be pleased. Anyway, I live out in the Colorado Rocky Mountains, and I'm really running out of time fast, but this is one of the biggest dreams I had in my life. As I was a young boy, I visited an aunt of mine in Montana, and I didn't have a lot of goals or aspirations. My life was kind of dreary. I really didn't have much hope when I was a kid. But these people, we went up there and stuccoed their house in Hamilton, Montana, and they had motorcycles. They lived in the mountains in little scooters and ponds to fish in, and it was so beautiful, and I thought, boy, someday I would... Geez, I'd love to live in a place like this, you know, have a place out in the mountains and fishing available and hunting, and just so cool. And I, you know, I never thought it would ever happen. I'll tell you, I live out in the mountains. Okay, we've got 3 four-wheelers. We can go from my house clear out into the national forest and fish and hunt. That's not my highest priority in life, of course, but that's a bonus, a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been a dreamer and a schemer all my life, and I've never been able to make anything happen. You know, I never made anything happen before AA. But that was something I had worked for most of my life, you know, in, especially since coming to AA. And it's the way I wanted to live. It just blows me away that it ever happened. I mean, I can't take any credit for it. I can't take any credit for the success in my marriage, the success in business, or anything. It's all a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. The best I could do when I got to AA was thinking about blowing my brains out in the basement of my house and getting kicked out of my own house. You know, that's the best I could do prior to coming to AA. And that's when I was trying as hard as I possibly could. And today, I've been given so many gifts. I only hope I can do AA justice. That's my hope. I mean, man, and I've got a lot of work to do. I'm not a big-time volunteer. I'll do what I'm asked. I don't get asked very often. I only hope I can give back just a little bit of what's been given to me. And I hope, too, and another thing that's really been important to me, it was instilled in me as a newcomer, that if you're new here, you're only limited by your own imagination. You really are. I was told that, and I didn't believe it applied to me. No way. It does. It applies to me. It does apply to you. If you can have anything you want in life, as long as you're willing to do the steps. Thank you.